You have come to alter and remove the frequency of limitation and to bring in the frequency of information. When you are informed, you move beyond the need to be in fear. When you feel uninformed and out of control, you do not understand the bigger picture. Each of you came to awaken something inside yourself, inside the coding of your being, the DNA, and you are responding to it. This is why you are on a search in all directions of your life to the areas where your specialties are most needed. Many of the beings who have incarnated as members of the Family of Light came to the United States because this is the land where you can make the most progress. This also happens to be a land where denial is pervasive. You believe that you live in the land of the free and the home of the brave. Yet you live in the most controlled experimental society on the planet. The tyranny that has been set up here is rather interesting because it is a tyranny without walls. As a country and a collective consciousness, the United States still has not reached an awareness that something is not right. Because everyone is so frightened of giving up the system in the United States, they are going to be forced to give it up. The system is corrupt. It does not work, it does not honor life, and it does not honor Earth. Consciousness must change. This is part of the divine plan, and this opportunity and setup are not going to be missed. In the next few years, a connectedness and communal cooperation will begin to run through this country so that you will stop separating yourselves with respect to political ideology. That separation was designed. Much of the political maneuvering going on, particularly in the United States, is purposely designed to separate you. The ultimate tyranny in a society is not control by martial law. It is control by the psychological manipulation of consciousness through which reality is defined so that those who exist within it do not even realize that they are in prison. They do not even realize that there is something outside of where they exist. We represent what is outside of what you have been taught exists. It is where you sometimes venture. It is outside of where society has told you you can live. You have been deprived of knowledge by frequency control. Frequency control limits the number of stations you can tune into. As members of the Family of Light, you must anchor new frequencies through static chaos and bring them into the physical realm. As you learn about your own personal history and discover patterns of ineffectual behavior that you must break and change, the planet pulses through its own patterns of behavior. You are about to repeat history as a planet in a most dramatic way.
Now, I'm not much into being a doomsday person, and it's certainly not doomsday, but as a humanity where the only thing that's going to make any difference in regards to where we're going with our environment and all the rest of it is a change in consciousness. Nothing, you know, no technology is going to do it, because from where I sit, the basic problem is greed. And the only thing that's going to change greed is consciousness.
What civilization is 6 billion people trying to make themselves happy by standing on each other's shoulders and kicking each other's teeth in. It's not a pleasant situation. And yet, you can stand back and look at this planet and see that we have the money, the power, the medical understanding, the scientific know-how, the love, and the community to produce a kind of human paradise. But we are led by the least among us, the least intelligent, the least noble, the least visionary. We are led by the least among us, and we do not fight back against the dehumanizing values that are handed down as control icons. This is something, I mean, I don't really want to get off on this tear because it's a lecture in itself, but culture is not your friend. Culture is for other people's convenience and the convenience of various institutions, churches, companies, tax collection schemes, what have you. It is not your friend. It insults you. It disempowers you. It uses and abuses you. None of us are well treated by culture. And yet we glorify, you know, the creative potential of the individual, the rights of the individual. We understand the felt presence of experience is what is most important. But the culture is a perversion. It fetishizes objects, creates consumer mania, it preaches endless forms of false happiness, endless forms of false understanding in the form of swirly religions and silly cults. It invites people to diminish themselves and dehumanize themselves by behaving like machines, meme processors of memes passed down from Madison Avenue and Hollywood and what have you.
And here then he was born. Born with the seven vestments within himself, hidden from all sight, contained within and behind this thing which we call the body. And having entered into the sphere of generation, he became mindful of the gifts that had been given to him. He felt them moving through himself. He did not understand them, but each of these vestments was a power of his soul, a power of consciousness within him, an attribute, an aspect, an adornment given to the soul by the stars, in order that the soul might find its way back home again. And so in birth, man, heavy with the gifts of the gods, which had become a darkness upon him, a burden rather than a release, was carried by the very weight of these divine gifts into the sleep of spiritual death, which we call physical awakening. And then begins the great problem of growth. Each child, growing from infancy to maturity, passes gradually through unfoldments, and these unfoldments are the releasings of the potentials of the soul. One by one, the locked attributes, the vestments given by the gods and planets, begin to become active through the manifestation of the individual. And little by little, he comes into possession of the seven powers of the planets in his daily life. He does not know exactly what these powers are, and most of all, he does not realize that in a strange way, these powers are all restrictions upon himself. Because his pure consciousness has been continuously restricted, and what we call the gifts of the planets are actually limitations imposed upon us by these conditioned psychic pressures and factors. Thus, man, adorned with all these benefits, is really the victim of his own adornment. He is less than he was in the beginning because he is no longer free to express his natural consciousness. So he goes from the cradle to the grave, and in the course of life he learns to use these various attributes which he possesses on the physical level of life.
I want y'all to think about something. If something is perfectly predictable, is there a need to be fearful of it? No. Because y'all know what's coming down the line, what do you need to be fearful about? If you know that something is going to happen, if you know the timeline by which the media issues what I call fear-based mind control programming, when the programming comes out, does it need to be fearful? No, because you already know in advance. The conundrum that we face as a species has more to do with our mind and the effect that fear has on human consciousness. Y'all hear me when I say that? It's not a physical thing so much as a psychological thing. That's why free your mind becomes so very important. The process of freeing one's mind liberates our ability to perceive ourselves as being just mere human beings who are subject to fear-based mind control programs. We begin to see that we are far greater than
that. Yeah, be aware of the motive force behind what we're doing, yes. And if the motive force is fear, which in many people today, that's, you know, I walk around this culture and I see a very neurotic culture. Everybody's afraid. What are they afraid? They're afraid of stepping out of line. They're afraid of losing what they have. And it's not dissimilar from anywhere else on the planet, you know. And, you know, that's a reductionist idea. You know, you can reduce everything to fear, but it seems to be, I prefer to look at it as an energy vibration, you know, that fear is the densest vibrational level.
Frank Herbert said the best fear is the mind killer.
The absolute impossibility of changing the past. The past cannot be altered. You know what can be altered? The future. That's what that movie's about. And you know where the alteration of the future begins? In the present moment. That's exactly right. That's the only place it begins. Okay? So what truth is, the demystified concept of truth, is it simply that which already exists. It's that which has happened in the past and is happening in the present moment. The truth does not exist in the future. When we get to those future moments, and it's the present, truth will be existent then. But not until, okay? So there is no such thing as truth in the future. Truth is that which has occurred in the past and that which is occurring in the present. It is simply that which is and that which has been. Please recognize, when I use the word truth, that is all I'm talking about. I'm not talking about the mind of God. I'm not talking about the entire reason for the existence of the universe. I'm talking about the events that have taken place in the past and are taking place in the present. That's all. And guess what? That's all the truth is. It doesn't need to be any more complicated than that. Okay? You want to make it more complicated than that, call it something other than truth so as not to confuse people to what truth really is. Truth versus human perception. Okay? Now, I want to ask people to imagine, see these white lines? Imagine these white lines that do not waver as truth. And imagine that the perception that is set against the truth, we're going to take three different individuals. This is individual A, this is individual B, this is individual C. Okay? Their ability to perceive what has occurred and what is occurring is what I would refer to as consciousness. Okay? Consciousness is a being's ability to recognize patterns and meaning with respect to those patterns. Meaning you have an accurate understanding of what's taking place within and around you, or you have an inaccurate understanding of what's taking place in and around you. If your consciousness is high, meaning it's at a high frequency, okay, that means you're going to have more of an ability to understand and recognize the patterns. If your consciousness is low, you're at a low frequency, you're going to see the pattern less. You're not going to accurately perceive.
The great flaw of the Occupy movement was that it couldn't focus on a specific demand. The energy behind the Occupy movement, much the same as with the Arab Spring, was an absolute total inability to accept the obvious criminality that was ruling everything and destroying everything at the time. The fatal flaw of Occupy was that it couldn't come to a clear focus as to what was needed, because the consciousness had not evolved to the point where you could focus on a list of demands. The beauty, the power of Occupy, which is why Department of Homeland Security had to destroy it, was that in the Occupy camps, a zone of consciousness was created, and the human learning curve was accelerating rapidly. In other words, the awareness, people were coming to awareness very, very quickly about what the real issues were. And that's what scared Homeland Security and Barack Obama and the US government and the banks on Wall Street terribly, what was produced as a result of Occupy.
Because we're not just talking about ignoring the realities and the responsibilities that we all have, but we're talking about creating that connection with the natural world around us. Because when we become conscious at a high level, which is the normal human path left to our own devices, then the universe can see us. It can actually see us and think, aha, there is a conscious, connected entity who is going about their growth and their unfoldment and their discovery, who's on their journey, and now I can help them. But it cannot see people who are not conscious. So that lies at the heart of this mystery of how do we resource ourselves when we tread on the spiritual path. We have to do it through knowing that consciousness is the key to bringing those synchronous events, to getting the particular type of resources you need. That happens totally in a two-way fashion. It's not just luck. It's not about getting your special book published. It's not about getting that dream job on that special organic farm somewhere. It's about whatever it is for you, and that changes for everybody. But the key thing is your ability to give in terms of your conscious growth, because that's what the universe wants.
And it's a stage, it's a stage, and it's a necessary stage. There's nothing wrong with people doing this, and there's nothing right with it. They're going to get laughed at, and they're going to get respected. But the thing is this, we are all, when we wake up, there are different levels of waking up, you see. And when you finally go past the heart chakra into the throat chakra and then into the head chakras, you realize and you learn and understand and see that you are Jesus Christ, the Savior. Because you have to save yourself, and Christ is within you. Christ can never, the light, see, Christ means the consciousness and light. The whole universe is conscious. Every single thing you see is dripping wet with consciousness. The sun, the air, consciousness is everything. It's the driving, intelligent thing that just makes everything seamlessly seem to just flow in a continuous flow of plasma. It's consciousness. It's electric. The force driving it is electricity. The power driving it is light. Still light. Light is still. When it separates, it becomes electric. That is what people refer to as the force of the universe, electromagnetism. And so we all wake up to the fact that we are Christ. We all have to.
Rudolf Steiner challenges us to be more conscious. More conscious, and also, I think, to ground our consciousness in the warmth of heart. And I feel one of the most important things about Steiner is actually that he encourages us to bring thinking and feeling together, so head and heart together.
There is no possible way of understanding or explaining the nature of any being whatever except through evolution, which is always an unfolding from within outwards, the expression of spirit or consciousness through the intelligence acquired. The will of spirit in action has produced everything that exists. If we understand that intelligent will lies behind everything that exists, is the cause of everything that is the creator in the universe, we may perhaps gain some idea of what is necessary for us to know in order properly to use our powers. We all stand as creators in the midst of our creations.
Culture that is constantly blending and blurring boundaries, and not just in cinema. Fact and fiction are blurred in reality TV, in newspapers where fact and comment and propaganda merge. And of course online, where the phenomenon is even more pronounced. And the blurred boundaries between fact and fiction are just a small part of this. We all live in the explosion of experiences and perspectives that constitute our everyday life, where imperfect, intimate, hastily made images are grabbed, self-made, and shimmer and multiply in endless, dizzying, self-replicating patterns of light and sound, where reality, fact, fiction, as well as identity, nationality, gender, and ethnicity are constantly mixing and merging and in flux. And of course, these changes create fears and powerful reactions, powerful emotional desires to reconnect with an imaginary long-lost past where things were clear and unambiguous, where boundaries were uncontested. And all of this seems to me as an inevitable consequence of a fast globalizing world and a reaction to what we can dimly see is an emerging global consciousness. And the point, or rather the challenge in all of this, is how do we exist in that emerging world and still locate universal human values, timeless values of truth and identity and compassion?
What I believe the Catholic Church has actually done is they have changed the meaning of what resurrection is from a spiritual death or an ego death to something physical. And then they placed an idol of worship in there. So in a way, what they have done is twisted it to where instead of it becoming something where you're supposed to better yourself over time, which is what the real teaching, I believe, was supposed to be about. It's about, you know, for example, when Jesus was crucified, he was crucified in a place called Golgotha. When we look into what that means in Aramaic, it means the place of the skull. And that gives us some insight into what was really meant by that. The crucifixion actually happened inside the person's head. And we look at the story of Osiris back in ancient Egypt. You know, he was also a resurrection god and came back as Horus. These different gods were different representations, in my opinion, of these personalities that came about from. So Horus was a resurrected version of Osiris. And we see this kind of thing over and over again across culture, but what's happened is, I believe, Roman Catholic Church has inserted things such as fear and holding hell and things like that over people's head, and the constant don't look at this, don't look at that, it's evil. And what that has done is it's kept people half conscious, because they're not allowed to go out and look at other things and say, well, look, this looks very similar to what I've read here. They don't want people to do that, because if they do that, then they start seeing the parallels and they start putting the pieces together. And I think that's what's happening. And so I think they've twisted it into this idol of worship. So the idea of worshiping Jesus, really, in my opinion, means worshiping higher consciousness. It means obtaining higher levels of consciousness.
We evolve through stages. And the difference between the esoteric view of this evolutionary process and the exoteric materialistic view is the materialistic view believes that it only occurred on the plane of manifestation matter, and it's produced the state that we are in now, and that's the end of the state, that fulfillment. The esoteric theory believes that evolution occurred simultaneously on the planes of consciousness up to this point where we find ourselves, and then a partnership between the human and nature occurs to take the evolution to the next point. In other words, we become co-creators with God to achieve the next stage of spiritual humanity.
We are living in a complex system, a complex system that can change, but when it changes very rapidly. It changes by the so-called chaotic attractors. Chaos, yes, creative chaos. But a chaos, when you get to this tipping point, a chaos means that you can either go down or go up. You can't stay the way you were. A chaotic system is bound to change. Which way will it change? It's up to you, up to us to recognize. It is up to us to act. There's not much time left. We either break down or we break through. Now, we need the power to break through, and that is the point to which I'd like to come. If we decide to be the first, we need to be more embracing. Yes, what do you mean by embracing? We need a more embracing identity. We think we are individuals. Yes, of course we are. But we're also members of a community. And our community is member of a nation, member of a city, member of an ethnic group. And all of these are members of the human family. So we need to have an identity which includes us as a human, as a member of the human species. If we don't do that, we are going to go after our own advantage and neglect the others. We will suffer the consequences. We need an embracing ethic. Of course, we all after our own interest, but we are also the interest as a member of a family. We have an anthropocentric ethic. We have interest as human beings. And we need an ecocentric ethic as well. In other words, we need an ethic as a human being. All of this. We used to live in small groups, but now live in a global tribe, not in a local tribe. We have to develop that. We need a new consciousness. And this is what I'm coming down. I am telling you, finally, what I wanted to say all along. We need love in a certain kind, in a certain way, in an embracing way. That is the sine qua non Without it, we won't make it. With it, we could.
Existing in the world that we do, looking through the perspective of our ego, which we are essentially locked into, when that psychic structure, and that's exactly what it is, a psychic structure, when the ego dissolves, consciousness merges back into the consciousness of all things. And I talk about this a lot, the idea that the ego is actually a capacitor. It's a piece of your consciousness that allows you to keep a very limited perspective on what we look around and see as reality. It's a capacitor in that it allows a certain amount of consciousness into your mind, into your physical brain, and allows the transmission of a certain amount of consciousness out. And it does that so that we can survive in physical bodies. Mm-hmm. Because it's also exactly where insanity lies as well, if it's uncontrolled to a certain extent. But the idea being that as soon as you take that capacitor off, the mind expands exponentially to embrace all consciousness. And subsequently, all consciousness comes to embrace you. And it's exactly what Borak describes. It sounds quaint to think about this idea that God is love, but to experience God entirely as an endless, eternal, vibrational act of love occurring always, and that everything you are and everything that you see around you is an unfoldment and expression of that cosmic, conscious love into physical reality.
What we have been provided with is an opportunity to embrace the power we all have. The choice to step away from the fear and to unite the human family. An opportunity for the human race to understand the connection we have to each other and to embrace a unity of consciousness. Certainly, it is extremely important that we free ourselves from the corporate shackles of this society. It is important that the social and political issues, the fake wars of contrivance, the loss of rights, and the attitude of our corrupt governments and police forces be dealt with. But what is even more important is that they be dealt with in the right way. That way is not through violence and revolution. It is not through a center of anger and hatred. The powers that be want violent revolution. They want the polarized energy such conflagrations produce. But this must not be done. For the most effective way to deal with it all is through a peaceful rebellion of non-compliance to the system and through adherence to the one law, to connect to the heart and to do the right thing. Many people are waking up to this, and the more people who wake up, the more the field is charged with their energy. And so the field changes and continues to awaken more in turn as they draw new energy into themselves. And so it continues exponentially. The powers that be know this. They know the field is changing. They know that we have this opportunity to move into heart energy. They can sense how precarious their hold over this world now is, and how easily this control could slip from their grasp. This is the main reason for the current global instability and political tension. And there is a reason for all of these things to have been thrust upon us at the very same time. That reason is to manipulate consciousness through the use of polarized energy by creating an atmosphere of tension, of distrust, of anger, and of fear.
I love to learn, I love to research. And this is also the thing that I fear. It's like, learning has become boring, but that's because, of course, you know, the way the whole sort of education system is boring. It's boring, and it's a sort of one size fits all, and very, I think, ultimately disempowering for people. And so So yeah, and at the same time, I have to say, I think I know we're in a period of great shift. We clearly are, and the problems are all too visible. And yes, there are the great numbers of people who are still very much asleep. And at the same time, I'm seeing more independent thinkers. I'm seeing more rebels, more people thinking outside of the box, you know, and challenging the system. And this is where, you know, the study of the legal piece and the sovereignty, I find exciting stuff we're seeing, because it is people, you know, really waking up to the system and the corruption within the system and the matrix itself. I mean, that really is the matrix, and it's designed. In other words, there's no sort of magic pill and, oh yeah, you just do this, this, and this, and you cancel your license and you cancel, you know what I mean? Good to go. No. It requires serious thinking outside the box, and also sort of a new form of community. And I do see numbers of people doing just that, and they're doing it not just, you know, the sovereignty piece, but through education as well, you know, sort of pulling their children out of that system and coming up with new ideas. And I mean, this is really what it's going to take. I think this is the time of the rebel. This is the time of the rebel. This is what we need, you know, because the thinking inside the box. And it's clear to me that it is, because so much emphasis has been put into keeping people in a box, that that's your clue right there, that you know, okay, this means, you know, we need serious, you know, rebellion here. Not in an immature way, not in a like French Revolution way where, you know, one force knocks over the existing force and you just have the same exact thing, just new faces. No. I mean, you know, it's a revolution of thought, because the prison that we're in ultimately is a prison of consciousness.
Yeah. Funny how we're talking here, and as we go through apparently different things, they connect into all the things we've said earlier. Intuition connects us into the source to see level of awareness, whereas our mind is the conscious mind, sees the next turn on the river. So because the intuitive knowing is coming from a level that can see the journey, it is going to have a completely different, often completely different, doesn't have to be, view of what to do and how to behave and act in and respond in a certain situation to the conscious mind.
Right.
Conscious mind's going to be going, you can't do that. Well, you've got a job. You can't just stop your job and go and do it. No, you can't do that. You can't go there to tomorrow. You've got an appointment here and all this stuff. And it operates on that level, and it can get so dominant in people's perception of how they should behave and what they should do, that basically the mind, the computer level, is running the show and running their lives. And the vast majority of people in the world are like that, but right. It's changing.
And then finally came across a book called The Holy Science by Swami Sri Yukteswar, and he's a Indian sage, saint, also quite an astronomer. And he mentioned almost just in passing in the introduction of one of his books that there's these cycles of history. And he was the first guy I ever read that gave a cause for it. And he said, you know, just as the earth spins on its axis and that gives you night and day because we face the sun or turn away from it, and that causes our consciousness to change from, you know, a waking state during the day to subconscious at night when our bodies are adapted better for sleep. And just as the earth goes around the sun and causes the cycle of the seasons and billions of life forms to migrate, spawn, hibernate, or, you know, do all sorts of things in mass, likewise there's a third motion of the whole solar system moving around another star. And so it was a very short explanation, but it made a lot of logical sense to me.
You know, the concrescence is already underway.
Mm.
You know,
you can see it.
Yeah. I mean, we've been in this state for quite some time. You know, it just makes sense as we move into the influence of these, let's say, galactic forces or just cosmic forces, we're under the influence of them all, you know, in a gradual way. It's kind of like in astrology when they say, well, this influence on this conjunction happens on this day, but you don't just feel it boom
on the day. Yeah. It's a process, not a point.
Yeah, we're talking about large the large sweep of that influence. And so I think probably what's going on in terms of human consciousness is much more important than earth changes.
The many sexual revolutions, liberation of the 60s, have changed American culture and world culture forever. We can never go back to the machoism that we had before the 60s. You know, in the old days, it was like, there was a sex, either yes or no, but now there are many, many options for the expression of your love and beauty. And by the way, that's the key learning I'm saying tonight. That's the signal, options. It's my hope and my desire that everyone that leaves this room tonight will go out that door with more options, more possibilities, more decisions and choices for different ways of living than you had when you walked in. And so that was one of the legacies of the 60s. Now they say that there was a counterculture. There was no counterculture. This is a left-wing partisan statement. There were 100 countercultures. There were as many countercultures as there were groups of friends and lovers meeting together to look in each other's eyes and smile. That's the point of the 60s. There was not one orthodoxy being replaced by another orthodoxy, but the notion of doing your own thing, that your brain creates your own reality, you make your own world, don't blame your parents, don't blame society, but figure it out for yourself, because exactly how you feel and think and everything that you define as your reality comes from decisions that you make with that instrument that lies behind your forehead.
I recall that school had a definite structure, and there had been 9 lessons each summer that I attended. The 9 lessons involved the manipulation of time, because learning how to use time as a tool is the key to reaching higher consciousness and a real relationship with the beings, or parts of ourselves, who are already superconscious. The secret school is part of the process of revising reality, a clandestine meeting of minds struggling to restitch the fabric of the world. It's about getting free of time, about remembering ourselves in all our truth.
You can create huge change. You know, Just before he was assassinated, Gandhi was interviewed by a young reporter who was set up from his editors, and he was asked Gandhi only one question, and the question was, how did you force the British to leave India? You didn't have any army, you didn't have any money, you had no official position. The British had been here for 350 years. They ruled with an iron hand. How did you force them to leave? And Gandhi's response, I think, illustrates this point I'm trying to make. He said, it isn't what we did that mattered, although that mattered. It isn't what we said that mattered, although that did matter. It was the nature of our character, our beingness, that led the British to choose to leave India. That is the essence of nonviolent action. And that's what happens when you implant a new concept in the consciousness of a lot of people and they act on it.
I remember a time when music had soul, and music had conscience, and music had balls. Do you recall that at all, or am I romanticizing the past? Excuse me? For the whole people here?
Yes, I do.
Yes, he does. Jimi Hendrix? Yeah. Any question about that guy? Stand by the mountain, chop it down with the edge of my hand. This guy had a dick.
All our parents just popped out children. Well, like, that was no big thing.
They weren't thinking back then.
That's what I mean.
There was no
people
internet.
People are becoming more actualized. They're becoming more conscious.
Yes.
We're becoming more conscious.
Yes.
Ben
sure.
Franklin, like, wasn't conscious.
Right.
He, like, tapped into some aspect, but they weren't fully formed people.
Right.
The Princeton Pear Lab experiments have also shown that people's minds have the ability to affect things at a distance. They take a device called a random event generator, which makes a sequence of random ones and zeros, or yeses and nos, based on a quantum circuit. What they have shown is that the mind can affect how that object behaves, what the stream of ones and zeros looks like. And it does not depend how far away you are from the person influencing the experiment. Even thousands of miles away, a person is able to affect the results just as well. So we have an ability to exert a force on distant objects that does not fall into any of the known category of forces. This new force goes through barriers that would normally stop the known forces. It even acts backwards in time in certain types of experiments. This new force, the Russians have called torsion. It's known by a variety of different names. It may be the same thing as what the Chinese call qi, the essence of Chinese medicine. It appears to affect space and time, and by doing so, it affects all the other forces, and it really calls for a new re-examination of physics.
Well, what I take from it is it's up to us. We don't have to accept that state of affairs. We can live in a better way. We can all, day by day, minute by minute, make choices that are nurturing and loving towards others, rather than that are limiting and selfish towards others. We can all make a better world. It is just a matter of individual choice. There's no magic about it. We just have to, each one of us, choose each day to do the right thing rather than the wrong thing. And that is to act in a way that manifests love rather than manifests fear.
Consciousness constantly changes, and so there are new influences added. And in this case, the influence that's added is ethics. And it is their complete and total undoing. There's nothing they can do about that. Well, it's happening right now with the disclosure of all of their nefarious dealings. All of their lies are coming out. The truth comes to consciousness. And all we're getting is lies. Guess what? That's all you were ever getting. Except now the truth of the matter is out, that they are lying liars. Be thankful. It's only 360 days. So naturally, ethics is going to override. It's going to all be exposed how rotten that whole system is to everyone. Then people will deal with it in their own way. So new technological developments will be empowered ethically. And the whole idea of power, empowering yourself over someone else, will become as foreign as cannibalism. For the same reason, an evolution in consciousness.
The Jehovah's Witnesses governing body will have one of their Jesuits in there, knowing what they're doing and controlling what they're doing and guiding them. The Baptists, the Mormons, all of them. That's how the system works. That's why you can't seem to break through the system. It seems like there's this wall of, you know, mind-controlled masses that believe in this system as a god. And, you know, they believe that banks have the right to charge us interest and governments can tax us to 50%, and they go along with all this shit because they're so stupid, they're so puny, and you know, so diminished and disheveled, shriveled up in their spirits inside, that they are puny little 9-to-5ers that you know, and then happily hand over 50% of that hard-earned money that they work in a factory, which pays them small money with no benefits. And then all of that factory proceedings goes to, you know, the controllers anyway. This is upside down, man. We've got the remedy in our hands, and it's consciousness awakening. That is it. Be aware of what's going on and say, no, we're going to turn it around. And we will.
This is a co-participation. So we're right. Really, we're creating, but we're also participating in the creation. So it's not a single event. I mean, if it was a single event, I'd say, okay, hey, let's end all this war and crap and let's clean up this place, let's have a good time. My voice is a single voice, obviously just didn't change anything.
Right.
But if you get enough voices to say the same thing, then what you're doing is you're amplifying the field. The more people that are in tune with the same voice, it becomes a crowd response. It's like a pacifist sitting in the middle, you know, one of those vegan pacifist guys sitting in the middle. If there's a fight that breaks out all around, they'll be caught up in the energy of a crowd response. And it won't be their consciousness that's controlling them then. Now they're just caught in the field. And they will pick up a chair and club somebody over the head with it like anybody else in that field. Even though at that moment when they were being conscious, they were a pacifist. But once they got caught in the field, they became part of the field. So the issue is, what field are we living in right now? And the field is, it's in a state of flux. And this is really critical because your audience is so involved with this upheaval that's happening right now, changing the fields, that there's an evolution going on. And it really is going to be a fine subdivision between like the 40s and unders and the people over 40. I think there's going to be a separation at some point, except there are a lot of wonderful old people, like myself, old people. The internet has everything to do with it. The internet is the nervous system of a new organism. And what's evolving? Here's what's important. Sometimes we think, oh, when humans evolve, well, how are they going to be evolved? They're going to get bigger heads and change their bodies. It's like, no, look, the human evolved. That's done. Cockroach evolved. Cockroach evolved 600 million years ago. Still the same cockroach. The human evolved. It's going to stay the same human. The evolution is not of the human. It's of the community of humans. Each human is the equivalent of a cell in the body of a superorganism called humanity. The evolution is the evolution of humanity. That's why the Arab Spring. That's why the breakdown of politics all over the place. That's why the thing is falling apart. People all over the world are recognizing we're all people in the same thing called humanity. And so we have to break free of the limitations that we have been programmed with. And in that breaking free, which means changing the thoughts, changing the beliefs, getting into a new understanding, we are on the threshold of an evolution that's so amazing. And what's interesting is people look around right now, they're scared to death. And I'm going, oh, you don't understand. This is the most important stage. The simple reason is this. The institutions that have provided for us up to this point, they helped get us here. They were important for a period of time. Economics, education, healthcare, politics, religion, all those things were helpful to get to this to a certain point. Now they're destructive.
When I started meditating, I was filled with anxieties, filled with fears, kind of a depression and anger. And I took this anger out on my first wife. And after 2 weeks of meditation, she comes to me and she says, "What's going on?" And I was quiet for a moment because it could have been any number of things she might have been referring to. But I finally said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "This anger, where did it go?" And I didn't even realize it had lifted. Now, these negative things like anger and depression and sorrow, they're beautiful things in a story, but they're like a poison to the filmmaker. They're a poison to the painter. They're a poison to creativity. They're like a vice grip. If you are super depressed, you can't hardly get out of bed, let alone think ideas, have that creativity flowing. So it's money in the bank to get that beautiful consciousness growing, which is flowing creativity, the ability to catch ideas at a deeper level. Intuition grows. This field is a field of pure knowingness. You dive in there, you sort of just know how to go. You know how to solve solutions. It's like an ocean of solutions. And you can just feel this thing growing. But the ultimate thing for me is the enjoyment of the doing, the enjoyment of life grows huge. I love making films now more than ever before. Ideas flow more. Everybody has more fun on the set. Creativity flows. There's no, people look like friends and not like enemies. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing, and it's us. In Vedic science, this field of pure consciousness is called Atma, the self of us all. At that level, as Dr. John Hagelin would tell you, at that level of life, we are all one. We're one. Diversity up here, unity down below.
Once we understand the concept that we are constantly broadcasting our personal energy signature into the field, and we're also receiving messages from the field, we can see how we can focus and actually attract not only our soulmates and soul matches, but our future business partners, and actually creating a future career for ourselves that is more harmonious to who we really are. We can also see how we can use the field to attract our spiritual teachers. We want to find teachers that resonate with where we want to go in our spirituality, regardless of our religion. But also, how we can use the field to create a dialogue with the universe itself. So, whether we're an architect, an astronomer, a biologist, a medical doctor, a musician, an artist, or even a student, by creating this dialogue with the super intelligent levels of the field and expanding our consciousness into the, ultimately into the 9 levels of the cosmos, the 9 levels of the angelic, the 9 levels of the field, we can get the answers to anything we can imagine. The cure for AIDS, the cure for, you know, biofuels, the next biofuels. We can find the secrets to nuclear fusion. We can find the secrets to unlimited zero-point energy. We can find the secrets to the next song, the next generation of music. All of that information is available to us in this field if we can tap into it.
I made earlier about the broad collective social conscious versus the individual. Until we begin to look at society in a social way, when you look at each other as yourself, not even poetic here, it's just you can't have social stability until everyone's taken care of. If someone's deprived on this side of the world, I'm not safe because they can be dementia can kick in, who knows what biases they might emerge, who they might trigger, and boom, suddenly a suitcase bomb explodes behind me at some restaurant. No one's safe anymore with the technological advancement. We have the risks, the Fukushima power plant again. You have to have a world-conscious view at this stage, especially with the age of modern technology and warfare. Or it's just, as in the words of Albert Einstein, our technology has exceeded our humanity.
In a literal sense, it had to be slippery because of the way that the patriarchal Christian society has dealt with all of us for the last couple thousand years, you know? It's had to hide. A lot of ideas had to be hidden for a very long time and are still hidden. Yeah, that's really why, in a literal sense, there's more kind of fun esoteric reasons why stuff would be mysterious or hidden and kind of hard to understand because it's not for everyone. You need to do work to pull it out, you know, like that kind of stuff that is, yeah, in the Western sense. But a lot of it, yeah, is literally just because it had to stay. Like, it was dangerous because it's a lot of the stuff that we're talking about kind of abstractly is dangerous to the status quo of consciousness.
Right.
And that's what I think, like, I don't know if it's, the more time goes by, it feels like we're kind of slowly, continuously, like, heading towards something like that. To me personally, it seems like it's just like every 6 months, things are getting more crazy in the culture towards people realizing that, or a shift in consciousness, really.
Consciousness shift.
It seems like it's going to be hard to keep people from it. I've only been thinking about it recently, but I wonder if it's going to be with younger people, that the more of this technology stuff that they've already had from when they were born, being around and dealing with, and then looking at us or the society of their grandparents or great-grandparents, like how they're going to decide to live, I think might really shift exponentially.
When I go to a party and people ask me, what do I do? And I say, I'm a professor, their eyes glaze over. When I go to an academic cocktail party and there's all the professors around, they ask me what field I'm in, and I say, philosophy. Their eyes glaze over. When I go to a philosopher's party, they ask me what I work on, and I say consciousness, their eyes don't glaze over. Their lips curl into a snarl. I get hoots of derision and cackles and growls because they think that's impossible. You can't explain consciousness. The very chutzpah of somebody thinking that you could explain consciousness is just out of the question.
My take on that would go, I could offer an example. Bishop Berkeley developed a theory that there is only consciousness and nothing else, and then Samuel Johnson kicked the table and said, this is how I refute this theory. You kick the table and you have kicked the table, and therefore things exist outside of the mind. In India, this would be no proof at all. The fact that I have a sensory proof that this table exists is no proof at all, because how can I trust my senses?
And to understand ourselves is one of the most difficult problems.
It's easy to understand the whole movement of entertainment, the industry. That's very simple. But to understand ourselves, not according to anybody, Freud, Jung, or the latest psychologists, but putting aside all those, to look at us. Can we look at ourselves actually as we are? In all of us, there is this urge to become, to be somebody, both outwardly as well as inwardly. Outwardly, it's obvious, the worship of success. And inwardly, there is always this movement to be something more than what one is. Because we don't know what one is first, but we're always eager to be more than what we are. The more or the better is the enemy of the good. So to understand ourselves, to look at ourselves, which is to be aware of all the content of our consciousness. Is that possible? I hope we're thinking together.
Astronaut Edgar Mitchell, one of our team of two astronauts who were the last group, I think, to walk on the moon. This was the third group to walk on the moon. On his way back, decided to do a psychic communication experiment. He didn't tell his superiors about it, but he'd arranged with several psychics on the ground back here on Earth to try to send them psychic messages about cards. There's a set of cards called the Zener cards, which have patterns on them, and during several intervals on the way back to the moon, he was 200,000 miles or more from the Earth at some of those times, he would send these signals back to psychics on the Earth. When he got back, he compared what he was sending with what they picked up, and the answers that they had received were accurate enough, they were well above chance, and they were showing that ESP was working even over those large distances. So at our present time, it appears as though that we don't know of any limits in terms of distance or time for psychic communication.
For people setting out magical paths is, you know, trust your own instincts and learn to use your imagination as a vehicle. Don't be frightened of using your imagination and think that you're going to end up in a fantasy realm, because if you're structured with it and disciplined with it, you will move through that and come out the other side, so that your mind becomes a tool that you can use, because that's what magic is all about. It's how consciousness works. So you have to use your consciousness to work it. So, and I wish someone had said that to me, sort of in my teens, because it would have saved me a whole host of problems.
A lot of the people that are doing these things are quite mystical, are having extremely strange experiences in the midst of doing all of this, and are somehow, you know, becoming the vehicle for something else, some that ultimately is perhaps a higher intelligence. And they don't necessarily know that all this stuff is in there when they put them down in the first place. And yet it is in there, and it's infinitely mysterious. And I think a similar kind of thing probably broadly pertains to some of these mystical texts that have got this kind of coding in there. Quite how it works, I don't think we'll understand that in our lifetime. I don't think we're even supposed to. You know, I think it's having the emotional apprehension that such a higher level of consciousness even exists, and that we're potentially the vehicle for it, is enough to be going on with. You know, that immediately puts you way outside of consensus reality, and the whole way the world works or doesn't work, as the case may be, and all the things that are wrong with it that need to be put right. You know, you will buy into that less and less if you're functioning from that kind of belief system, and maybe that's part of what it's trying to do. You know, to bring in an enormously higher level perspective.
You know, it occurs to me that there are some technological directions that we should exercise some wisdom over. One of those technological directions, of course, was nuclear warfare. We should have exercised some wisdom over that, and now we've opened Pandora's box, and the chances are that there will be a nuclear conflict on this planet focused around the Middle East in the next 30 years.
Right.
And another area where we should exercise some wisdom is on this ghastly idea of transhumanism. Which to me is utterly, utterly horrific idea, and I'll tell you why it's a horrific idea. I suppose it comes back to my belief system. I can't prove this, but the idea of making the human body immortal or of downloading ourselves into machines, first of all, it's incredibly egotistical and egoistical, and secondly, it does not allow us to have the possibility of spiritual growth through, for example, reincarnation. If we're locked into one frame forever in the personality we have now, maybe there is such a thing as reincarnation. Maybe that's the beauty of the human experiment, if you like, that we die in these bodies and we come back in a whole other life, in a whole different series of circumstances, in another time, to learn new lessons. And what a horrible fate and what a horrible mistake it would be if through technology we locked ourselves forever in this body, or even worse, downloaded our consciousness into machines. How then would we reincarnate and have a whole new and different experience from which we could learn and grow and develop? So I think it's a very, very horrible, very arrogant idea. And I think it's the ultimate outgrowth of what I call materialist reductionist science, that everything is to be reduced to matter and that there is no realm of spirit. And, you know, they don't know that's a fact. They just think it's a fact.
The two began what Ouspensky called self-work, and Gershev began to show him more and more what the ultimate goal to accomplish would be. During this time, Gershev explained to Ouspensky much of what he had learned in his extensive travels around the East. One of the most overarching lessons that Gershev spoke of was the existence of multiple levels of consciousness. In this, he described that there are four levels of consciousness. First, there is the mechanical level, in which the majority of humanity finds itself, in which all of our actions and decisions can be linked to mechanical reaction to outside stimuli based on experience and what we would call memory. He argued that man is asleep. He moves mechanically through the world, obeying the path that is laid before him. He also stated that this mechanical man, like all machines, cannot be held accountable for their actions, which held a great deal of resonance at this time when millions were senselessly slaughtering each other during World War I. Within the second level of consciousness, man is aware of only small blips of consciousness and knows that there is something greater than what he is aware of, but is still unable to alter his reality. In the third level, man can move into consciousness at will, however, he is still out of control. Only in the fourth stage can man have a complete objective awareness of consciousness. However, Gershev acknowledged that there is no living man today who can achieve this fourth stage yet.
In the Bible, Moses wrote that Adam and Eve were free to eat of the tree of life. This means that Adam and Eve were free to feed themselves with the science of the tree of life, the science of God, Kabbalah. And as the tree of life also symbolizes the soul, Adam and Eve, humanity, were allowed to enjoy the benefits of abiding in a state of perfection with an awakened consciousness. A fully illuminated consciousness is represented in the tradition of the Christmas tree, a symbol of the tree of life as passed down through Germanic esoteric traditions. Possessing an illuminated tree of life within means that one's inner senses are fully opened and active, providing a direct relationship with God.
Let us consider this problem. The human eye opens at a rather late stage in the development of the individual. He has already done the most marvelous work he will ever do. In a mysterious way, in his mother's womb, he has built a human body. And this body has organs that are directed to certain ends and intentions. And these were not the organs designed by reason. designed by consciousness. Reason and consciousness comes to itself and asks later, what is it I'm all about? What is it I am here for? Why is it I do this and that?
Over the last few years, there's been an enormous growth in the truth movement. With the enormous growth has arisen enormous amounts of information to digest. This is, of course, very healthy for the continuing expansion of consciousness. But as we would also expect during the growth of such a movement, arise in many different layers of deception, sometimes very subtle, is introduced to counter consciousness. As intelligent researchers, as I know most of us are, we find an ever-increasing importance to ensure that we do not fall victim to said deceptions. Many of these techniques used are not new in their nature, but only new in their content. Many times, they use the old systems and techniques of subliminal mind control that has been used on the masses for centuries. Now more than ever, it is paramount that those of us who love truth spend a little extra time evaluating the systems and methodology used by those we would seek the truth from. This means giving any particular area of interest that little extra research it deserves to either confirm or deny its credibility before we disseminate this information to others.
Like Bruce Lipton, I think Bruce was mentioned yesterday, or someone mentioned Bruce Lipton, The Power of Belief. Fantastic book, and he's done some fantastic research. Dr. Lipton has shown that your body literally downloads frequencies, it downloads from the field. You know, your environment is what affects you. It's not your genes, it's your environment. And you download a frequency. If you were to take a kidney out of my body and put it in your body, you would start experiencing me, not because the kidney has memory, but because the kidney downloads that frequency from the field. So it's out here. Consciousness exists out here in the field. It's not local to your body. And it's the same for everybody. We're all in this together. We're all different biological computers experiencing part, one aspect of the same consciousness from a different perspective. So why would we invalidate other people's so much? I want people to see my view as valid. Why would I invalidate yours? Because your view is just as valid as mine. Because you're the same as I am. You're the same computer that I am. Different computer, but you're downloading a frequency from the same consciousness. So we're all in this together. We're all here as one. We are literally one single consciousness experiencing itself subjectively, just the way Bill Hicks said in his comedy routine. Boy, did that guy happen? You really did. But you can do this. You can be one. They're all it is. And you can be completely unique, absolutely unique and individual on yourself, because there is not another biological computer like this one. There's no one who can experience reality from the same perspective that I do. No one will ever be the same as me. So knowing that, and knowing that you're all like that, why would you consider yourself to be anything but perfect? Because you're perfect in being you. And being you is what you're supposed to be, obviously, because that's who you are. That's what you're here to experience. You're here to experience life from that unique perspective that is you. So don't ever view yourself as being of any less worth than anybody else, because we're all in this together. And this is the way I live my life. And when you can live your life with that understanding, suddenly all the barriers between people break down, all the division is gone, and there is the solution. Because we live in a very, very divided society, which is what allows all of this to keep going. The social pathogens, the religious pathogens, the economic pathogens, the way we judge ourselves, the way we're separate from each other, and we're trained to be separate from each other, and we're kept as divided as possible. Class division, race division, religious division, everything we can think of to keep people divided. There's the solution. We've got to start seeing ourselves properly so that we can see other people properly, see other people as valid, and that's how we change the world. We really do, and we can do it.